This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the resistance is very much alive and thriving. We saw another sign of this today as 200 more Palestinian abductees were released from Israeli prisons, and Hamas released four female Israeli soldiers during a prisoner exchange. After fighting for more than 15 months against the Zionist genocide in Gaza, Palestinian resistance held a parade in a show of force today. Not only did the Zionist regime not destroy Hamas, but according to two U.S. congressional sources, between 10,000 to 15,000 more individuals have joined Hamas since the Gaza genocide began.
The second group of Palestinian abductees has been released from the Israeli jails under a ceasefire agreement between Hamas and the regime. Some of them were supposed to stay in jail for the rest of their lives, but now the regime was forced to release them and bow to the will of Gaza resistance groups. The Palestinian Prisoners Club advocacy group confirmed that among those freed is Mohammed Al-Tous, 69, who has spent almost four decades in the regime's detention. Among those released was also Raed Saadi, the oldest prisoner in Jenin, who had been behind bars for 36 years. In exchange for them, Hamas has released four female Israeli captives. They were supposed to be one civilian and three soldiers, but Hamas released four soldiers instead, further imposing its will on Benjamin Netanyahu, leaving Israel with no choice but to comply. The manner in which Hamas released the captives also made headlines, highlighting the group's enduring strength. The images from the captives' exchange show Hamas parading through the streets with modern equipment and significant personnel, contradicting Israeli claims of having weakened the group. The prisoner exchange deal has increased the popularity of Hamas among Palestinians.
Returning these female soldiers in this honorable manner confirms the enemy's failure to achieve its most important goal of recovering the female soldiers without paying any price or giving the resistance any image of victory. What happened proves the opposite. The occupation hoped that the resistance would submit, but the opposite happened.
Israeli officials have repeatedly asserted that their military operations have severely weakened Hamas, with statements suggesting the elimination of key leaders and the destruction of critical infrastructure. However, the fighting on the ground tells a different story. Hamas, until the moment the ceasefire came into effect, continued to exact a heavy price on the Israeli military, not just in terms of hardware, but also personnel, proving its resilience and strength.
Bismillah.
As the dust settles, it becomes evident that despite Israel's attempt to dismantle and completely destroy Hamas in the aftermath of the group's October 7 operation, Al-Aqsa Flood, the group has shown that it has not only successfully remained vigilant and strong in the face of Israeli attacks, it also managed to push through the objective of releasing hundreds of Palestinian abductees from Israeli prisons, some of whom were sentenced to life.
I'd like to welcome a guest to the program. Hafsa Kara Mustafa, journalist and political commentator out of London. And Fahim Mohammed, broadcaster and commentator, also out of London. Well, welcome both of you to the program. Let's start it off with Hafsa. Let's talk about the contrast that we witness. We saw four female Israeli soldiers smiling and waving with gift bags, as opposed to emaciated Palestinians, with many of them even having to get immediate medical treatment upon their release. What does this say in general about the moral narrative, if you want to say, that despite the unbelievable pressure that the resistance in Gaza were under, they did their utmost to keep the captives safe and healthy?
Well, I think it confirms that we've always said that this wasn't two equal sides in so many ways. They're not equal because, obviously, on the one hand, you have a very powerful country that is supported by the countries on the flag and uses the most sophisticated weaponry, faced with an essentially civilian population and a resistance movement that uses crude weapons just to defend itself. So just in that, we can see disparity. But we also see the disparity in the morality of the two sides. On the one hand, you have a genocidal state that has indiscriminately attacked hospitals, schools, refugee camps, has tortured, has filmed itself, its soldiers filmed themselves actually committing acts of vile torture against detainees. And on the other, you have Hamas, who have kept these detainees in perfect condition, in great health. Some of them even thanked and smiled to the Hamas militants who released them. So we can see that the disparity between the two sides can't be greater, and mainly and essentially on the moral issue, because on the one hand, you have a state that was founded on terrorism and criminality and lies, and on the other, you have a movement that was born out of the oppression of its people and has, despite all its suffering, kept its morality and its ethics.
Well, let's stay with that. Speaking of morality, Fahima, I mean, since the beginning of this genocide in Gaza, world opinion has changed concerning the Zionist regime as well as the resistance. Now, your thoughts on, after seeing the shape of the prisoners on both sides, how do you think that can affect public opinion about both sides? And how can it add to even more clarification of the correct narrative of the Palestinian story?
Well, since October the 7th, we've actually known about the hostages being taken, but many have never been known about the Palestinians that were captive and held under administrative detention, a practice that allows for imprisonment without formal charges or trial, often based on undisclosed evidence. And as of January 2024, the number of Palestinians detained by the Israeli prison service has been, close to 10,000, including dozens of minors and women. So nearly one third of these individuals were held under administrative detention. And there have been former detainees, you know, reporting of harsh conditions during their imprisonment. A Palestinian woman, Dania Hanashche, women released as part of the ceasefire deal, described being held without charges and experiencing deteriorating conditions, including poor food, inadequate medical care, and overcrowding, to name a few. And treatment of child detainees, we've never heard this across the world, anywhere, in any form, the detention of Palestinian children has raised particular concern. Organizations to save the children have reported that rising numbers of Palestinian children detained without charge in the Israeli military system has faced violence and abuse while in prison. And testimonies include accounts of beatings, threats, and other forms of mistreatment. And there's so much data compiled by the Defense for Children International Palestine indicates that Israel's use of administrative detention against minors reached a record level over recent months. A number of children held rising nearly sort of like from 6 years old in nearly 2022 to 85 till September 2024. And these allegations of torture and abuse is repetitive over and over again.
Yes, indeed, unfortunately. Well, Hafsat, the number one goal announced by the regime for its onslaught on Gaza was to destroy Hamas. Now, today we witnessed the resistance en masse, well-dressed and equipped in parade, as well as the Palestinian abductees being released. What message does that send to the Israeli regime and its supporters, and how much of a slap in the face has all of this been in showing the complete failure of the regime?
Yeah, absolutely. It is an absolute failure for Israel because, again, despite all its military might, it hasn't been able to destroy Hamas. And if anything, what we've discovered today, actually glaringly, is the fact that Hamas has been able to regroup and is still a force to be reckoned with. Now, their main objective was the eradication of this movement. And yet here we are, we're seeing them still committed to the defense and the resistance of their people, still fully equipped and well prepared to push the battle further until necessary. So this is an absolute failure, given the strength and the support that Israel has and enjoys. And of course, it confirms once again that you cannot beat an oppressed people, because despite all their superior technological weaponry, they are faced with a population that is from the region, that has nowhere else to go, that has no intention of leaving, and will defend itself to the till. It's history repeating itself. It's Vietnam, it's Algeria. Over and over again, you will see these situations where you have, on the one hand, a power that seems invincible, faced with a resistance movement that seems incredibly weak and very badly equipped, and yet on the battleground, the results are clear to see. Hamas is still there, it's still a force to be reckoned with, and actually Israel hasn't achieved a single one of its objectives. So it is a failure on the part of Israel, and it's an absolute slap on the face of the Israelis, of course.
Right. Well, you mentioned Algeria and Vietnam. And Fahima, what about that? I mean, one would think that an entity could learn from past experience, from history. But we see today that the Palestinian resistance appeared in full force with new uniforms and equipment. Why did the Israeli regime think that they can actually destroy a resistance, which despite so many people have said, and we have seen time and time again with many leaders of the resistance being killed, but the struggle continues. The resistance will always go on because basically the native people, they have no other choice. They've been pushed into this position. I mean, your thoughts about why the Israeli regime would ever think that they could be victorious over the native people?
Well, as we've seen, like you've said, and our guest, that it is something that is repetitive over history. And, you know, the West is going to continuously try their way. And because they actually do have 3 billion, as we speak, you know, constantly being given to Israel to try. And now there is a policy shift and sanctions, because in January 2025, this month, the U.S., Treasury Department, under President Trump directive, lifted sanctions previously imposed by the Biden administration on Israel settlers and organizations in the West Bank, which means these sanctions has now targeted individuals and groups implicated in violence against Palestinians, freezing their U.S. assets and restrictions against assets in the U.S. financial institutes. So these removal of these sanctions aligns with a broader railback of the Biden era policies. And we have to also understand that even if they are shown as being failures in one instance, they still are not giving up, because there are settlement expansion plans and also more prisoners taken in the West Bank, and they've moved to a different area with plans approved for construction of close to 3,000 settlement units in the occupied West Bank within 6 weeks time frame. So this initiative again is derailment from what was before, but an acceleration at the same time. And as we see, there is still so much happening. And even though there is sort of the prisoner sort of deal and the release of, I wouldn't call them prisoners, to be honest, I would call them also hostages in Palestine, it's also under the deal where there is an international kind of agreement between Trump and the UAE. That's why they want to have these kind of maybe further prisoner releases, but at the same time, they want to sort of develop more economical sort of like alliances with the UAE, namely Saudi Arabia and Qatar. As we've seen already, that Trump has already asked for 650 sort of billion, saying to round it up to a trillion for Saudi to invest. So there are reasons why even that they're not looking at this as a real sort of like letdown and failure, because they have other plans in the background and still happening as we speak in other areas to still undermine, you know, what's going on with the sort of prisoners that are being released in Gaza, but also, you know, attacking more in the West Bank.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that being said, though, Hafsa, what about the veneer of the invincibility that has absolutely been shredded? Because the Zionist regime, I mean, that was one of their modus operandi, trying to inflict such fear and also at the same time trying to show that they were invincible, that no one could touch them, which is definitely, that has been broken with everything that has happened in the last 15 months. I mean, your thoughts on that side of things, because on the other hand, as Fahime said, of course, the money will still continue coming from the West and their supporters. But at the same time, the face that they wanted to present from the world, one being the moral army, two being invincible, one would think that that's gone forever. Your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think this war has been devastating in many ways, obviously, given the death toll of the Palestinians. But I think it's been devastating in a good way for the Israelis, because they've completely lost the moral high ground. They are exposed for what they are, which is a genocidal apartheid state, which was built again on ethnic cleansing and has perpetuated the genocide, and brazenly so. And I think the pity capital on which Israel was built because of what happened to European Jews in Europe has now completely been dissolved, and they can no longer use that. They have now actually behaved far worse than the Nazis that they have claimed to have fled from. And so now their argument of an Israel that was built to protect Jews and to be a sort of beacon of democracy in the middle of the Middle East has completely been destroyed. And it's been destroyed through their own means and through their hubris. Of course, the resistance movements have contributed to that, but I think it is very much their own doing. And what they've also achieved is recruit essentially far more resistance members, because all these young boys who have seen incredible suffering, who have seen their entire families families wiped out have nothing else to do but to continue the fight and continue to defend their own land. And that is very much the legacy of the 14 past months. Maybe at some point Hamas was weakened at some point, and yet this conflict and the scale of carnage has reinvigorated it. And now the Israelis will have to face up to the idea that they will never be comfortable in occupied Palestine, that they can never live freely and serenely whilst they're occupying and oppressing a people. And this is what the 14 months that have passed have actually showed the Israelis, but also the rest of the world.
Right. Well, Fahime, I mean, in a Reuters report on January 24th, it was reported that two U.S. congressional sources have said they have intelligence that Hamas has increased its membership by 10,000 to 15,000 people. I mean, your thoughts on this? Again, the goal was to destroy Hamas, and now this is coming out of Washington itself that perhaps up to 15,000 more members have actually joined the ranks of Hamas.
Well, we need to remember that it's not just the resistance, Hamas itself, that has that kind of mindset of continuous fight and battle. It is also a religious and a spiritual way of thinking, in the way in which, you know, the Palestinians have endured so much oppression over the decades, that all they know for generations is that. So they are defiant. They are going to be someone who's going to stand up, not even if they are in the military or any sort of authority. It's built within them. So they only are giving the options for the Palestinians to either be, a victim, which they're not, but also to stand up and resist as even normal everyday people. And that's why the numbers have probably increased in that sense. And we are also not addressing the fact that the reasons why even maybe Israel is also backing down despite all of their billions is that their people, the Israelis, they've not reported widely, but there has been reports of their own soldiers actually, leaving the military, going away and not wanting to face fighting anymore, and not being able to maintain that sort of resistance mindset that we have, from the Palestinian side. There's lots of, reports of suicide. They've even imposed laws for the Orthodox Jews to come in and actually, fight wars, which they themselves say it's against the Jewish laws and their religion to even do that. So again, there is a lot of internal fighting within the Israeli sort of administration, the people itself, the protests that are there, which is half and half divided as well against this, which is not being reported. And clearly so, because it's not going to be in any sort of favor for Israel. It's not just the international outroar and outrage, which now has come to light. It's also within, where people have also been taught and brought up in a particular way of thinking as the Arabs and that nation as the enemy, when even they themselves as Jews that are practicing also feel that kind of remorse, and also thinking that, their ways of oppression is not correct, as we've seen week by week with the Jewish, communities participating in the protests and also speaking up for the Palestinians. So they do have a problem. And I think, when we see and we watch, Western mainstream media, it is only showing, one-sidedness for a reason. Because if they were to be fair to show what's going on, I think they're in much more problems, with their patriotism than we can even imagine. So it's not surprising that the sort of resistance has increased in numbers because of faith, because of spirituality, and obviously of everyday people that have endured for years and have to continuously do that and are given no other option but to stand up and rise.
Right, indeed. Well, Hafsa, Israel was forced to release some of the thousands of Palestinian abductees who they have imprisoned. Now, some of these individuals included those who were sentenced to life imprisonment. I mean, what does this say about Hamas being able to impose its will on the Zionist regime? And also, today, the Zionist regime said that they were expecting three Israeli soldiers, female soldiers, and a civilian, whereas Hamas released four female Israeli soldiers. I want to talk about the way that Hamas is basically imposing its will now on the regime.
Yes, I think it's a very interesting turn of events, because we were under the impression that Israel was pulling the strings and it had all leverage. But actually, Hamas, by doing these little gestures, has actually showed that it was pulling the strings and it had leverage on the Israelis. I think that's a major point. It doesn't seem huge when you look at the disparity between the number of Palestinians based on the number of Israelis, and many are commenting that it somehow shows that one Israeli life is somewhat worth more than Palestinian lives. But I think what it does show, in fact, is that now Hamas is in total control of the narrative, and it's very much in the decisive position, whereby we assumed earlier on that it was willing to abide by any obligation imposed by the Israelis and its supporters. And in fact, now we've seen that the Hamas militants have actually regained control of the narrative, and they have decided, and in this gesture have actually shown the world that absolutely they're very much in control, and they pull the strings, and they know what they're doing, and they have a position by which they control the negotiations. They're not just supporting and bearing what the Israelis are doing and telling them to do. They're very much an equal partner in this negotiation, and they're imposing their will. And I think that that's also a sign that mood and the reaction towards this duality is very much changing. It's not just a victory on the battlefield, which is difficult to establish at this point, but it is very much a political victory for Hamas and for the resistance movement in general.
Right. Well, Fahime, I mean, the Zionist regime dropped 100,000 tons again, 100,000 tons of explosives on Gaza. It's so mind-boggling even just reading that. And it destroyed over 88% of the area. But despite this, not only has the resistance not been broken, but they are more popular than ever. What does this mean for the future of the Israeli regime?
Well, what does that mean for the future is that they will continue to do what they do as long as they have the U.S. backing. And they do, especially with the new sort of administration, which is heavily armed with sort of like ministers and people that are in the actual Israeli sort of lobby groups. So even with all the, you know, wider condemnation, unfortunately, if they are going to have the sort of economic backing, they will continue to do what they do, but it won't be obviously as before the plans that they want. And there will be more international outrage and, you know, accountability, even though there's been failures to condemn what they've been doing by whether it's Western countries or the lack of accountability, criticizing, you know, their sort of like inconsistence, sort of discriminatory with international law. And at the end of the day, we do see that they will continue. There's no other way but to continue because of the financial aid that is going to continuously drop in. And like I said, they've got different sort of agendas now, especially with Trump coming in, and they will want to have more sort of like say in what happens next, probably in Gaza, with regards to restructuring and money, which again will probably be with sort of the help of the UAE, because obviously they have that sort of finance to probably go in and build and be in alliance with sort of the US, and that probably could be the future. So again, I mean, there is so much that is still waiting, but unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be where they'll be able to come back. And even if they do come back, the reconstruction is in the billions and it might take years. And then whoever takes control of that, unfortunately, it won't be the Palestinians, it won't be Hamas, and it won't be people that actually are deserving. So it is definitely something hard to sort of grasp, as much as, you know, we are here to sort of say that, you know, Israel has, you know, sort of like, you know, failed in many ways. But again, it's the Western laws and the Western ways that usually kind of take control to a certain extent.
Okay.
And with that, we'll see how this unfolds over the next coming weeks and months.
But 30 seconds, Hafsa. I mean, your thoughts, same question. Because at the same time, do you think that the Israeli settlers can be as comfortable as before, the way they lived, with the fact that very much the resistance is more live and active than ever before? 30 seconds.
No, absolutely not. And I think this is the lesson that we have to learn from this. Their days are numbered. They know now that they can never be comfortable. They can stay on, obviously, and they will, and it will cost billions of pounds to protect them. But the bottom line is that there is a fierce people that will not let go and will not let go their resistance. And I think we're seeing many, many Israelis flee now from occupied Palestine, return to the US, return to Russia. And I think we're going to see much more of that over the coming years, because in essence, colonial powers all have a sell-by date. We've seen that before, and we'll be seeing that.
And on that note, thank you both for being with me. Hafsa Kara Mostafa, journalist and political commentator out of London. Fahim M. Mohammed, broadcaster and commentator, also out of London. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
This title given to the 11th Imam, Al-Askari, is because of a military camp.
Al-Kindi, he was a philosopher who lived during the time of Imam Hassan Al-Askari. When he gets there, he finds Imam moving towards a community who are anticipating him.
This is Dialogue, an introduction on the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mehdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Hassan ibn Ali al-Askari, alayhi salam, the father of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, was the 11th Imam of the Infallible Imams from the Ahlul Bayt of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. The blessed and pious Imam carried the banner of Islam, undertook the goals of the religion, and sacrificed his life unto this way. He was indeed a fountainhead of knowledge and wisdom. He faced many incredible difficulties and tragedies and hardships in order to spread and promote and keep intact the high values and goals of the religion of Islam. Truly, there are so many countless favors that have been bestowed upon the Muslims by the divinely appointed Imams, the infallible and immaculate Imams, including Imam Hassan al-Askari, alayhi salam. Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of the father of the awaited Savior of humanity, Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. We are talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Askari, alayhi salam. There is this very beautiful dialogue that Imam al-Askari, alayhi salam, has with one of his companions. And in this conversation, there's a very interesting phrase that I wanted to very quickly and humbly speak about, and that is that Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, he says that there should be no hostility except against oppressors. Now, this is such an interesting statement here. Of all the statements that Imam al-Askari alayhi salam said, one of the statements that he brought up was that there should be no hostility except against oppressors. Now, this is something that sometimes we have a tendency to forget, as the Holy Quran even reminds us and tells us that we should be merciful to the believers and we should be strict and firm and determined when it comes to the unbelievers, when it comes to the oppressors, when it comes to the tyrants. And a lot of time we do it the other way around. We end up being very strict and firm and very determined, and we stand up against the believers. And on the other hand, we are very merciful and kind and meek and humble when it comes to the oppressors. Now, this is the exact opposite of what we should be doing. We find that Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, he very beautifully speaks about this when he sees that there should be no hostility shown to anyone except the oppressor. So when it comes to, you know, people that are not doing the oppressing, when it comes to people that are not doing the tyrannical activities, meaning when it comes to people that are the downtrodden, the oppressed, the disenfranchised, those that are weak in the land, those that are taken advantage of because of their weakness, you know, including, for example, women, children, widows, orphans, the poor, you know, these people should be helped. These people should be supported. The hands of these people should be taken so that they come out of this point of weakness and they have some sort of stability, of course, with the propagation and the name of Islam, because it is Islam that is teaching us to help these individuals. And likewise, on the other hand, we have oppressors. And now this hostility against oppressors, this standing up against oppressors, of course, this can be done in many different ways, you know, in a situation where it is incredibly dangerous and our life is at stake. And if it does not damage the religion, then we can have this enmity and this hostility within our hearts. But we need to keep in mind that sometimes when we keep this hostility in our hearts, it damages the religion. And the religion cannot be sacrificed in order to save our life. It's a very important point. Imam Hussein alayhi salam teaches us this very clearly. And even Imam al-Askari teaches us this very clearly, that when it was a time to speak up, they did speak up. And sometimes, or many a times, this speaking up of theirs led them into some kind of trouble when it came to the oppressive powers. So Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, he was imprisoned while Imam Hussein alayhi salam was martyred. But still, this hostility towards the enemies of Allah, this hostility towards the oppressors and tyrants is something that must be done, of course, with all the variables taken into consideration. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Askari alayhi salam. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
Since he was a, you know, prominent person in the government, you know, even the Christian priests were had gathered in his house at the time when Imam was supposed to come. And so Imam was taken with, you know, honor by the government officials. As soon as he realized that the Imam has reached the door, he came out of his house without any, you know, hat or anything, and barefooted as a way of, you know, expressing his humility against the Imam. And the priests were all in their uniform with him, and he was carrying this Bible, you know, hanging it. Like, you know, sometimes we have people put it on this chain, or if not on themselves, they have it in their car, you know, for barakat. And he met the Imam, and he says, Ya Sayyidina, أتوصل إليك بهذا الكتاب الذي أنت عارف به منا. That I, you know, I am pleading to you in the name of this book, referring to the Injil that he was hanging on his neck there. And you know more about this than us, about this book. I ask you to forgive me for giving you this trouble to come to my house. وحق المسيح عيسى بن مريم وما جاء به من الإنجيل من عند الله. He says, in the name of the Messiah, Isa ibn Maryam, and whatever has come in the Injil, I actually asked the Khalifa. Why? Because لِإِنَّا وَجَدْنَاكُمْ فِي هَذَا الْإِنْجِيلِ مِثْلَ الْمَسِيحِ عِيسَى بْنَ مَرْيَمْ عِنْدَ اللَّهِ. Because when I study the Injil, I have found you in this book to be like Isa in the eyes of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this Christian is looking at the Imam, you know, as a somebody similar to Isa ibn Maryam. And Imam said, Alhamdulillah. And then Imam told him that as far as your, you know, request for me to do the dua, Imam said, I actually give you the news. Ibnaka hadha fabaqin alayk. He points to one of the sons. He says, he will be there. He will survive and get well. وَعَمَّ الْآخَرُ فَمَأْخُوذٌ عَنْكَ بَعْدَ ثَلَاثَ أَيَّامٍ. The other son will be taken away. Means he will die after 3 days. هَذَا الْبَاقِي يُسَلِّمْ وَيُحْسِنْ إِسْلَامُهُ وَيَتَوَلَّانَ أَهْلِ الْبَيْتِ. And this son of yours is going to survive. You know, he will become healthier. And when he grows up, he will become Muslim. And his Islam would be good, and he will be from those who is devoted to the Ahlul Bayt. Of course, you know, people will say, how did he know? Well, this is all discussion about Ilm al-Ghayb. And that is the reason why even those who do not, you know, those who are enemies, or those who do not even believe in them, still would seek their du'as. They know that they have been blessed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so Anush and Nasrani there, he says, if this is what you say, I accept it. I accept the decree of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala regarding my sons, that one will survive, the one Allah will take him back, and I will not complain because you have said that. And this is where the Christian priests who were with him kind of got annoyed. And they said, "Ya malaka la taslim." They said to Anush, their host, if this is the case, the way you are interacting with this person, why don't you become a Muslim? And this is where we come to realize that there are some people who still maintain taqiyya. Apparently he was Christian, but he says now, Ana Muslimun wa Mawlana ya'lamu dhalik. I am a Muslim and my master knows about it.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
in the limelight.
The United Nations reference to the sea of orphaned children in the besieged Gaza Strip shines light on a devastating reality. Between 17,000 and 18,000 Palestinian children have been left without a family as a result of the relentless 15-month-long Israel's genocidal war. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Turkey's Anadolu News Agency has covered this story and tells us more. A devastated Palestinian mother clutched the remains of her murdered son and delivered a tearful eulogy upon returning to her home after a ceasefire deal between the Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement and the Israeli regime came into effect on 19th of January. Filled with grief, the bereaved mother spoke with emotion about her son Hassan, who was martyred in an Israeli strike amid the genocidal war in the Gaza Strip, the war that has lasted 471 days. She said, "I feel like I will find my son. Indeed, we belong to Allah, and indeed to him we return. Gather his bones for me, gather everything of him. I swear I feel it, my soul, my son, my heart." She added, "You are my only son. O Allah, reward me in my affiliation and replace it with something better. I've come to you, my son. No one searched for you but me. I couldn't sleep or find joy until I found you, my son. My son went out and didn't come back to me." Her profound words revealed the pain of countless Gazan families who returned to what remains of their dwellings in the bruised and battered coastal enclave. Her eulogy quickly went viral, with many drawing parallels between her pain and the pain felt by countless Palestinians who returned to the Gaza Strip after more than 15 months of genocidal war. The genocidal war reduced the besieged Gaza Strip to rubble, leaving devastation at every turn. In October of 2023, shortly after the Israeli regime launched a genocidal campaign, it ordered the evacuation of Palestinians in Gaza. The directive rendered hundreds of thousands homeless. Following the ceasefire agreement, displaced Palestinians started returning to the Gaza Strip, only to encounter heart-wrenching scenes of destruction. Homes once filled with memories now lay in ruins. In the southern Gaza city of Rafah, some Palestinians even made their way back before the ceasefire officially took effect, clinging to the hope of reclaiming fragments of what they had lost. The Israeli regime's unrelenting genocidal campaign in Gaza has pushed the death toll to over 47,000, a staggering figure expected to rise as thousands more bodies are believed to be lying beneath the rubble. According to the Palestinian Civil Defense, the remains of more than 10,000 individuals yet to be counted in the official death toll are still buried in the ruins across the Gaza Strip. Mahmoud Bassal, the Civil Defense spokesman in Gaza, detailed the rescue operations underway. Mahmoud Bassal said in a statement posted on social media, "Our teams are working tirelessly to retrieve bodies and clear remains from roads and streets. The efforts are immense across all areas. However, the situation in the northern part of the Gaza Strip is perhaps entirely different." The new Arab website has also covered the same story and tells us more. Rami Abdo, head of the Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, shared his pain on X by posting a video of his cousin's daughter singing in front of a group of Palestinian students dressed in black and white. He wrote, "Ragad Saleh Farwana, my cousin's daughter, was a brilliant child who chaired her school's student parliament. Assassinated by Israel on 15th of October 2023 during the Gaza genocide." Rami Abdo added, "All day, our family has been trying to retrieve her body from underneath the rubble, but all attempts have failed. Israel continues to block the equipment needed to recover thousands of victims." American journalist Abby Martin, who shared a heart-wrenching account of the grief endured by Moaz Musa, a videographer from Gaza Fights for Freedom, on the first day after the ceasefire agreement. Abby Martin wrote, "Moaz Musa spent the first day of the ceasefire walking miles to get burial shrouds for his fifth brother, he discovered murdered by Israelis. He found his body underneath the rubble and dug a grave with his bare hands to bury him alongside his other brothers." The United Nations reference to the sea of orphaned children in the besieged Gaza Strip shines a light on a devastating reality. Between 17,000 and 18,000 Palestinian children have been left without a family as a result of the relentless 15-month-long Israel's genocidal war. However, despite the ceasefire agreement in place, the Israeli regime continues to attack civilian targets and claim innocent lives. Civil defense in the Gaza Strip on Friday, 24th of January, said at least 20 Palestinians have been martyred by the Israeli occupation forces in Rafah city since the start of the ceasefire agreement on Sunday, 19th of January.